After Schneider left, Huey walked down to Pearson Phelps's store and told Phelps about his need for a ride if anybody came to town from that direction. Phelps expressed concern about Huey's injuries.
I'll be as good as new pretty soon, and maybe a little smarter.
As the words left his lips, he felt he was lying to himself as well as to Phelps.
I hope you're smart enough to quit riding those bad broncs.
Schneider kept a pot of coffee in the saloon and urged it upon his customers when he felt they'd had enough of his other merchandise. Huey had rarely seen him drink anything other than coffee. Schneider contended that whiskey was made to sell, not to drink. Huey accepted his invitation to a cup of coffee, then asked where Schneider kept the broom. After a mild protest, the Dutchman handed him one from his storeroom. It probably pained the man more to watch Huey work than to do it himself. But Huey persevered until he swept the dust out the front door. Then he went back to the storeroom and began cleaning that, too.
Two bottles of bourbon. I need them for the ranch.
He heard a familiar voice from inside the saloon. At the storeroom door, he saw Fat Gervin buying some liquor. Gervin spotted Huey, standing with the broom in his good hand. Surprise faded to a look of satisfaction.
Finally found a job that fits you, Huey Calloway.
Huey's skin prickled. He wanted to say, "You're the son of a bitch that put me here," but he bit back the words. Huey had always been generous with whatever little money he had. Often he lent it to down-on-their-luck friends and strangers without worrying about getting it back. But Fat Gervin owed him, and sometime, the good Lord willing, that self-important gentleman would pay up.
If I was you, Fat, I'd be off to Fort Worth or someplace finding me some lawyers like old man Jenkins has got.
I don't believe that lawsuit business. You're just a hoorahing me.
But Gervin's eyes revealed doubt.
I've got him on his left foot, and I'm going to keep him there.
For lack of something constructive to do, Huey was lying on the cot with his right arm over his eyes in Hannigan's office when a tall man walked in.
Oh, I didn't mean to wake you up.
Oh, wasn't sleeping.
Though he had been napping, compensating for another restless night spent mostly awake.
You may not remember me, I'm Farley Neal. Mr. Phelps told me you're needing a ride.
Huey blinked sleep from his eyes. He recognized the man who, it was said, was keeping company with Spring Renfro. He arose and shook Neil's hand.
Oh, yeah, I do remember you.
He could not have forgotten. He gave Neil a long study, wondering how serious he really was about Spring.
I've got a wagon, and I'm going to Alvin Laudermilk's this afternoon. Somebody can carry you on over to your brother's place in the morning.
Huey had reservations about riding with Neil, but he didn't want to remain in town either.
You sure won't put you out none?
Oh, I've been stranded myself, and somebody always came along.
He seemed genuine enough, though Huey kept a few reservations, just in case.
I'll leave Blue a note.
At Hannigan's paper-strewn roll-top desk, he found a pencil advertising the Fort Worth Stockyards and scrawled a few lines on a ruled tablet.
I don't like for people to worry about me. Blue's got troubles enough of his own.
Neil helped Huey roll his bed, though Huey would rather have done it for himself. He was not keen on getting in Neil's debt. He was indebted to too many people already for favors he might never be able to repay. Neil tied the roll and carried it outside. Huey dragged his saddle, blanket, and bridle until Neil came back to take them from him. Two young horses hitched to the wagon appeared to be in training. Alvin Laudermilk had long made a business of raising and training horses and mules for the saddle or for the harness.
You needn't worry about them running away and spilling you. They're pretty well broke.
Well, I'm pleased to hear that.
A wreck could undo all the healing he'd accomplished and add to the damage. Neil gave him a boost up, not loosing his hold until Huey was safely set on the wagon seat.
Thanks.
Huey tapped his cane gently against the sideboard.
Never thought I'd ever need three legs to get around.
Well, things happen no matter how careful we try to be. It's nobody's fault.
Huey saw Fat Gervin climbing into a red automobile in front of the bank and figured he had bought it with his father-in-law's money. Resentment warmed him, but he kept his own counsel.
No, it's nobody's fault.
He studied Neil as the man climbed into the wagon. trying to find something about him to dislike. As Neil took hold of the leather lines, Huey saw that he had big working man's hands, similar to his own, rough and calloused. One knuckle was knocked down like Huey's, probably the result of an accident suffered in the line of duty. His face was lined with the marks of living, of working in the sun. His gray eyes were crow-tracked at the corners and had a way of looking straight at Huey, unflinching, yet making no judgment. Huey took him to be just what he appeared, a cowboy through and through. He could find no reason not to like him, apart from the fact that he was keeping company with Spring Renfro. The road to the Laudermilks was long. Neil seemed to sense that Huey didn't feel like talking much, and he didn't push him for conversation. Huey felt more at ease riding on the wagon seat than in Hannigan's truck. Even when one of the horses broke wind, the smell suited him better than the odor of gasoline. He wanted to ask about Spring, but he was a long time in gathering the nerve. He took a longer trail.
So, how's everybody out at Alvin's? Is Julio Valdez still there?
Well, Julio's the top horse and mule man after Alvin himself.
He always was. How'd he get along with old Lady Faversham?
Huey regarded Alvin's vindictive mother-in-law as being a few bricks shy of a full load. A woman who could find fault in Jesus Christ.
Oh, I get along with her just fine. For some reason, she seems to like me.
I'm glad she likes somebody. She used to pray for lightning to strike me and Alvin both.
Huey fretted a while.
And Miss Renfro?
Fine lady. But you know that.
Yeah, I do for a fact.
Neil stopped the team at a fence line. Huey apologized for being unable to climb down and open the gate.
I'd have to open it anyway if I was by myself, and I'm pleased to have the company.
He handed the lines to Huey.
I reckon you can drive him through after I open the gate?
Huey took the reins in his right hand and flexed the stiff fingers on his left, which protruded beyond the cast at the first joint. He didn't want to admit any doubt about his ability to handle the green team, though that doubt was substantial.
Well, nothing to it.
He eased the team through the open gate. Though one of the young horses began acting up, Huey kept a firm grip on the reins and brought the pair to a stop. His right hand was slick with sweat, but he felt a sense of minor victory. So far as he could remember offhand, it was the first substantial challenge he had met and mastered since his big bronc wreck. He handed the lines back to Neil and rubbed his sweaty hand against his trousers.
Like I said, nothing to it.
The horses surged against the harness and the two men rode on in silence a while. Farley gave Huey a quick glance.
Spring tells me you and her once came close to marrying.
She told you about that?
We don't have any secrets. I've told her all about my first wife. Ada was a good woman, patient, kind. A lot like Spring. Saw most things the same way. She was,
Neil looked away. However long it had been, it was obvious that he still grieved a little.
People say you and Spring may marry up.
Well, everyone's talked about it but us. How would you feel if we did?
Huey had to be honest.
I don't know.
Do you feel like you still have some claim on her?
No claim. I don't reckon I ever did have. But to be honest, I still think about her a lot. Sometimes I wish...
He felt his hand sweating on the cane.
Well, I wouldn't blame you none if you put me off right here and let me walk back to town.
I wouldn't deserve her if I did a thing like that. I can understand you still thinking about her. After my wife died, I roamed around a long time trying to find someplace I belonged. Then I met Spring. She'd come close to marrying once even before she knew you, but the poor fella died in Cuba during the war. Do you know about that?
She told me.
She made me feel like I'd finally found a home. I expect it was that way for you, too.
For a while. Till the old ways got the best of me, and I thought I just had to leave.
I had the traveling fever once. Finally got over it. Have you?
Huey rubbed his hand against the bandaged knee, which ached from the jolting of the wagon.
I don't know. Maybe. That crazy black stud may have put the fire plumb out.
Huey had worked for Alvin Laudermilk for short periods, so the ranch headquarters was like a second home to him. It was comforting to see it ahead as they passed through the final pasture gate. Several goats, unafraid, clustered at the roadside and watched like kids at a parade. A burro stubbornly stood its ground in the middle of the road and would not move until Neil got down from the wagon and threatened it with a stick.
Go on, get out of here!
The place appeared but little changed from the last time Huey saw it, except that a modest new house stood to one side of the sprawling single-story one that was home to Alvin, Cora, and Cora's mother. Huey surmised the smaller house went up for Neil, who could not be expected to sleep in the combination bunkhouse and tool shed indefinitely, though Julio Valdez did it for years. The small schoolhouse wore a fresh coat of white paint that gleamed in the sunlight like vanilla frosting on a cake. There, spring taught children from several miles around, because town was too far away. To their regret, Alvin and Cora Laudermilk never had children of their own, so they built the country schoolhouse on their place that they might enjoy the sight and sound of others' sons and daughters. Spring lived in a corner room of the L-shaped Laudermilk house and took her meals with the family. Huey wasn't sure if school was out for the summer, but certainly it must be out for the day, as the sun was almost down. He watched the white building nevertheless, hoping he might see her step outside at any moment. A screeching peacock heralded the wagon's approach. A couple of blue-gray guinea hens trotted out of its way in a fluttering panic. The Laudermilk headquarters had always been something of a menagerie. Whatever the species, beast, fowl, or fish, if it wasn't carnivorous and would survive here, Alvin had it. It was Noah's Ark without the water. Julio Valdez heard the trace chains and came out of the barn as the wagon passed on its way to the big house.
Hey, Huey! You come to stay?
Just a night, Huey. Ain't caught you a senorita yet?
They run too fast for me!
Alvin Laudermilk strode onto the broad porch of the big house as the wagon approached, a jolly smile breaking across his ruddy face.
Well, look at what just dragged in. You couldn't stay away from Cora's cooking, could you, Hugh?
Been tasting it in my dreams.
Alvin helped him down.
Cora, put another plate on the table. Better make it a platter. Look who's come for dinner.
Huey noticed a telephone line strung above the barbed wire fence that paralleled the wagon road. Alvin had a telephone now, but Huey doubted he needed a phone to talk to anyone within less than 2 miles. His voice would carry that far. Cora came out onto the porch, wiping her hands on a white apron edged with lace. There had always been something of gentle elegance about Cora Laudermilk, even when she and Alvin started their married life 30-something years ago in an unpainted one-room shack. She spent those years guiding and cajoling her husband past his various weaknesses, the worst being whiskey and cussing, so that they might not be parted in the hereafter. If Alvin truly quit drinking, as was claimed, the hereafter seemed secure. He was in other ways an upright citizen, a substantial rancher, whose neighbors repeatedly re-elected to be a county commissioner. Everybody in the community would turn out for his funeral someday. Huey hoped that was still years in the future. Cora already knew of Huey's injuries, but even so she seemed dismayed. She was the caring kind of woman who would bandage a sparrow's broken wing and raise doggy calves on a bottle.
Alvin, you help him up the steps and into the house so we can feed him. There's nothing like good solid food to hurry the healing process.
The screen door bumped open and a heavy-set woman pushed onto the porch in a wheelchair, her gray hair a tangle, her voice belligerent.
I can't hear myself think for all the commotion.
Her accusing eyes lighted upon Huey and did not soften as they took in the cast and the bandaged knee.
Some people are like a bad penny. They keep coming back,
Mother.
Huey couldn't remember anybody ever shutting old Lady Faversham up before she'd had her say.
He's the first cowboy I ever saw that was bound up tight enough to suit me. He ain't no condition to be a danger to poor, weak women folk.
No matter how well Alvin provided for her daughter in later years, Mrs. Faversham had never forgiven him for having been a poor man at the start. She believed Cora settled for too little in marrying him. She became equally protective toward Spring Renfro, fearful that some lusty rake hell might despoil her innocence. Huey always felt a little guilty in the old woman's presence, whether or not he'd done anything to feel guilty about.
I'll just be spending the night and moving on, Mrs. Faversham.
She raked him up and down with what the vaqueros out at the J-Bar would call an evil eye.
Been many a young maiden's life ruined in just one night. But I reckon you're not in a shape to do much damage.
Her eyes softened as Farley Neal came up onto the porch, carrying groceries in his arms. Huey thought that anybody that old woman liked had to have something wrong with him. But for the life of him, he hadn't seen it, and he'd been looking. Huey used the cane to hold the screen door open for Neal, who had both hands full.
Go on in, Huey. You know where the wash pan is. On the back porch.
Washing one-handed, he dried his face on a towel and cast the pan of water out into the yard, scattering several chickens and a guinea hen that had been pecking around in the dirt. Huey and his cane walked back through the hall into the dining room. There stood Spring Renfro, blue eyes wide. He had taken her by surprise. She brought both hands up to her face.
Huey, I thought you were still in Alpine.
I left.
Of course he had left, if he was here. She stared at him for a long, quiet moment. Once the surprise was gone, her eyes guarded whatever thoughts lay behind them.
You're looking better than when I saw you last.
He wanted to say, you've always looked good, but he couldn't.
Pleased to see you again.
She stepped closer, looking at his arm.
I hope it's knitting all right.
Her voice carried the kind of general solicitude she might have given to anyone, even a stranger. He wished for more.
Well, if itching means knitting, it is.
It's good to see you at home, Huey.
Well, I ain't home yet.
You're among friends anywhere you go. You're always at home.
She gave him the smallest of smiles, finally, and Huey melted. Old Lady Faversham wheeled her chair down the hall and stopped in the doorway to the dining room, shocked at seeing the two together.
Farley Neal, you better get yourself in here! A wolf is after your lamb!
It had been Laudermilk family custom to gather around the piano in the parlor at night and sing while Cora or Spring played. Huey's singing was more appropriate for night guard at the edge of a cattle herd than for a parlor, so he kept his voice low. Spring's clear soprano carried the melody in perfect pitch, and Huey thought Neal's smooth baritone would serve well in a church choir. The two made pleasant harmony together. Much too pleasant, Huey felt. Old Lady Faversham had a strong voice better served in yelling than in singing. She couldn't carry a tune in a milk bucket.
I hadn't had a chance to buy any new sheet music in a while, Huey. Surely you've learned a few new songs.
He had, but they wouldn't do for a family parlor.
Well, I'm afraid I don't have much ear for music.
But you've got big eyes for a nice-looking woman.
Mrs. Faversham's gaze switched to Spring, then back to Huey. Huey felt his face flush. If Spring had any reaction, he couldn't see it. Eventually, the piano went silent, and the conversation began to lag. Old Lady Faversham slumped in her wheelchair, mercifully quiet, her eyes closed. Alvin yawned, and Cora laid down the knitting that had occupied her hands. Huey reluctantly pushed himself to his feet, leaning heavily upon his cane.
It's high time I let you all get your rest.
He turned to Spring.
You must have school to teach tomorrow.
School's out for the summer. But it is late.
Well, I'll be taking my bedroll out to the tool shed.
Oh, there's an extra bed in my house. No need to wake up Julio.
A house would be more comfortable than the shed, though Huey wondered that Neal was being so kind to him. Perhaps he was trying to make a good showing for Spring. Huey saw nothing wrong with that, so long as it got him a good bed.
I'm obliged.
Be careful on the steps, Huey. Help him, Farley.
Huey appreciated her concern, though it rankled that she had to see him this way, unable to take care of himself without help the way he used to do.
Damn you again, Fat Gervin.
Huey and Neal walked to the smaller house. Just inside the door, Neal struck a match and lighted a lamp. The house still had a new lumber smell and the faint odor of recent painting. Huey recognized a couple of pieces of furniture as having come from the Laudermilk parlor. The rest appeared new, but plain and utilitarian.
High living for a cowpuncher.
I'd have settled for much less, but Cora insisted. She wanted it to be nice for spring, if things go that way.
Well, they will, won't they?
Well, I was figuring they would.
He looked at Huey, then turned away.
I'm not sure now.
Huey wondered what he meant by that. Huey settled into a spare bed in a small room off the kitchen. He tried to keep his eyes closed, hoping to bring on sleep, but he kept opening them, looking at moonlight reflected from the window. He was as wide awake as if it were the middle of the day. He thought a long time about how he must look to everybody, especially Spring, hobbling around on one leg and a cane, one arm useless except for limited movement of the fingers. The doctor told him to keep the knee tightly bound at least a couple more weeks, but now, of a sudden, the binding seemed oppressively heavy and hot and restrictive. He flung the thin covers aside and sat up on the edge of the bed. He had cut off the right leg of his long underwear above the knee to accommodate the binding. Even then, it had been difficult to pull the shortened underwear and his pants on over the bulge of cloth. With no light except what came through the window, he found the knot the doctor tied in the gauze covering. He couldn't untie it with his fingers, so he cut it with his knife and began to unwrap the binding, slowly and carefully at first, then quickly, wanting to be done with it. When the cloth lay like spaghetti on the floor, he cautiously tried flexing the knee. It moved, though stiffly, like a tight hinge badly in need of oiling. With the movement came pain, like a knife point punching into the joint. He worked for several minutes, improving the flexibility, though he couldn't straighten the leg completely. When he worked up enough confidence, he reached for his cane and stood, putting his weight first upon his left foot, then increasing it slowly on the right. He found himself shivering and realized he was sweating profusely. A night breeze through the window came chilly upon his skin. He wanted to close it, but feared he would wake Neil. He raised the tip of the cane from the floor and tested his full weight on the leg. He found he could stand, even if shakily. When he tried to walk, however, the leg gave way with a stabbing pain. He caught himself on the cane, stopping a fall. It had almost been another disaster like his first attempt to walk on a crutch. He felt dizzy and sat back on the edge of the bed. A match flared, lighting Neil in his underwear.
Are you hurt?
Huey's face warmed with embarrassment.
My feelings are all shot to hell. I think I'm all right otherwise.
He felt like 10 kinds of a fool. The flame curled the match down near the end, burning Neil's fingers.
Yes.
He quickly dropped it and struck another, lighting a lamp on a small bureau. He touched his tongue to the burned fingertips.
You weren't supposed to take the wrapping off so soon, were you?
That doctor doesn't know how helpless I feel when people have to take care of me like a baby. I'm a grown man.
Yeah, let me look at that knee.
Neil knelt, gently probing it with his fingers. The joint remained sore, but the surface looked almost normal except for a reddish scar.
All right, let's see how far you can bend it.
Huey showed him.
Yeah, it won't straighten all the way.
It's been bound hard and fast. You have to expect it to be stiff at first.
Huey felt a rush of disappointment that left him empty and a little angry.
Well, if I was a horse, they'd shoot me.
A horse and a man ain't the same.
Well, they are in some ways. When a horse gets too old or too stove up to use, you shoot him or turn him out to pasture. I ain't ready for the pasture.
Surely you don't want me to shoot you.
No. But if the chance comes my way, I may shoot Fat Gervin.
You want me to help you? To rewrap the knee, I mean?
Nah. I'll leave it like it is. That doctor's way off in Alpine. I won't tell him if you won't.
Huey managed a little sleep once he forced down his disappointment. He awoke to the crowing of a rooster and the neighing of a horse in a corral, letting everybody know it was time to feed. The knee felt lighter with the binding off. Huey tried bending it again. At first, it was tighter than when he went back to bed, but after a few attempts, he got it to flex as far as it had last night. He tried standing on it without the cane, though he held to the bedstead as a precaution. After a few tentative steps, he decided he couldn't throw away the cane as he had thrown away the binding. Not for a while. Peeking into the room where Neil slept, he found the bed made and the man gone. Through the open window floated the distant sound of conversation from the corrals. In the early morning light, he could see Neil and Alvin forking hay to horses and mules. Julio was probably milking the Jersey cows.
Ah, to be out there helping.
Huey felt guilty for having slept almost to sunup, but he knew he'd be more of a liability than an asset. Some of last night's anger revived. Huey limped to the barn, leaning on the cane, his eyes squinted against the first bright sliver of sunrise on the horizon.
Sleeping late, ain't you, Huey? You know the Bible speaks hard against sloth.
Huey tried to think of an appropriate rejoinder, but none came. He wasn't in a joking mood. He guessed that Alvin and Neil had close to 30 young horses and mules in the big corral. These would be in training for riding or working to wagons or plows. Alvin no longer broke them himself. He farmed them out to various young bronc riders, such as Tommy Calloway, to be ridden several times, wearing the rough edges off so they were ready to start their real lessons, administered by Alvin, Julio, and, Huey supposed, Neil. Huey had rough-broken a good many himself in the past, turning them over to Alvin to be honed into useful shape. As always, Alvin picked out favorites for special treatment. He moved close to a young red roan and caught a handful of mane high up on the neck. He led it out to the fence where Huey stood. It walked along obedient as a pup.
I wish you'd look at this colt. Smarter than my mother-in-law and 10 times easier to get along with. You ever get tired of Biscuit? This one will make a good hand. He already watches a cow like a cat watches a mouse.
Well, me and Biscuit are figuring on getting older together. Someday.
The rate he was going, Huey thought darkly, he might have little use anymore, even for Biscuit, much less a young colt. Alvin patted the colt on the neck and let it go. He unlatched the gate and came outside, waiting for Neil. Julio walked up from the milking pen, carrying a pail in each hand.
Well, we'll eat breakfast, then I'll take you over to Walters and Eve's in my automobile.
Well, I hate to pull you away from your work.
Oh, Farley and Julio do most of the work anyhow. I'm getting too stove up. Comes a time when we all have to settle for less than we used to.
Huey sensed that Alvin was not just speaking about himself. Through breakfast, Huey sat across the table from Spring. He stole glances, trying not to be obvious, and often found her staring at him. She would avert her eyes, hiding her judgment, whatever that might be. Neither said much. Old Lady Faversham held the floor through most of the meal anyway, talking about the hardships women had to endure living in an uncivilized environment, not the least of them the ingratitude of their men. That train of thought led her to a lecture about the faithlessness of cowboys.
Now bet you dollars to donuts you could round them all up in a corral and the sum total of their worth would not buy you a spoonful of beans.
Given an opening, Alvin turned to his wife.
Cora, how would you and Spring like to go with us? Y'all ain't had much chance to visit with Eve lately.
Well, that's a nice idea, Alvin, but I have too much work to do. Spring, why don't you go? You could return those dress patterns I borrowed from her and take her some of the preserves we put up last week.
Spring seemed caught in a bind. She glanced at Huey, then at Neil. His nod told her it was all right to go, but his eyes wished she would not. She shook her head, not looking at Huey.
There is a lot of work to be done. Perhaps another day.
Huey stared at the floor in regret. He had much for which to apologize to her if he ever got the chance, and if he could work up the nerve. Likely as not, it was too late anyway. The time for apology passed 4 years ago. Alvin went to start the automobile and back it out of the hay shed where it was kept safe from the weather. Shortly, the roar of the engine told Huey that Alvin had pulled the car up to the front of the house. He gave Spring one more quick glance.
I'll go fetch my roll.
Huey left as hurriedly as the cane would allow.
Spring, you're a smart girl. I don't blame you not wanting to go with Alvin and that fiddle-footed cowpuncher. His kind are a dime a dozen and badly overpriced.
Neil came into the little house as Huey finished tying his bedroll.
Here, I'll carry that for you.
Well, it was my idea to invite her in the first place. She belongs to you.
Well, she doesn't belong to anybody. She's a free woman.
Huey wondered if the man wasn't too good to be real.
Lots of old boys I've known wouldn't have had so much trust.
Regret pinched Neil's eyes.
I didn't always have. I was young and green and a little jealous when I married. Kept a tight rein on Ada when there wasn't any reason for it. I realized that after I lost her, and I didn't like myself much.
He hoisted Huey's bedroll over his shoulder.
I wouldn't want Spring to look back years from now and have regrets on my account.
Huey thought that this was the right man for Spring, but the thought was too painful to speak aloud. Cora gave him several messages to take to Eve. Huey assured her he would deliver them, though he knew he'd forget most of them before he got there. For the hell of it, he waved goodbye to old Lady Faversham, who sat in her wheelchair on the porch. She didn't respond. She was not there to wish him farewell, but simply to be certain that he left. Spring and Neil stood side by side. Neil nodded at Huey, and Spring made a weak smile that carried a hint of sadness. Huey forced himself to look away, facing forward. Elvin's automobile started to move and came within inches of running over a flustered peacock that contested him for the right of way and yielded just in time.
Ha ha! Them peacocks belong to my mother-in-law. When she ain't screeching, they are.
Though getting in and out of the car was a struggle, Huey insisted upon opening and closing the gates. The wooden ones were a little challenge, but the tight wire gates were almost more than he could handle. Alvin was sensitive enough to Huey's pride that he let him wrestle them alone, though it must have taken all the patience he could muster not to get out and take over. Alvin would never be a good poker player. Whatever he was thinking showed on his face. His pity was apparent. It only made Huey feel worse.
Sometimes I almost wish that stud had killed me instead of leaving me in this shape. Having to depend on everybody.
Well, have you talked to the Lord about it?
Pray? I've prayed for other people, but it always seems selfish to do it for myself.
No, not when you got a real need. The Lord generally answers, though not always like you hope for. You remember how fond I always was of whiskey? Well, it got to a point that I was sick a lot of the time, so me and the Lord had a long talk about it. Well, now, I done the talking, but I could tell he was listening because pretty soon it got to where it tasted so bad to me that I didn't want it anymore. But when he takes things away from us, he usually gives us something in trade. We'd lose the energy we had when we were young, see, but he gives us more wisdom. And as he takes away our ability to do one thing or another, he also takes away most of the want to, so we can be content with what we got left.
Well, I ain't content with the way I am, and I don't intend to settle for it.
Well, that's fine. The Lord loves a man who won't give up trying.
Well, it wasn't the Lord that put me in this shape. It was Fat Gervin. Be damned if I'll let him win.
Alvin nodded approval.
There you go. You're getting mad, and that's good. As long as you're mad, you keep fighting. But when you go as far as the Lord intends for you to, you'll have to make your peace and be glad for what you still got.
What have I got? The shape I'm in? I'll do well to swamp out Dutch Schneider's saloon.
Well, you told me Morgan Jenkins offered you a job as foreman. You wouldn't have to ride no rough horses to do that.
I couldn't take care of a ranch afoot.
Hey, the wheel has been around for thousands of years, you know. Every buggy and buckboard has got four of them.
Huey noticed dust rising to the south. Alvin pinched his eyes almost shut, trying to see through the haze.
It's like horses running. You don't reckon somebody's rustling a bunch of my stock? I ain't got a gun with me.
Huey doubted that Alvin had ever pulled a gun on anybody in his life. It was not his style. He was a peacemaker, like Walter. Rustling had become rare in this big country because the horse had not been born that could outrun a sheriff's telephone calls. In these vast distances, a thief would have to travel far and hard to remove himself from harm's way. Alvin left the road and set the car bouncing across the open pasture. Huey held tightly with his good hand to keep from being tossed around in the seat. He could only imagine what this jarring might do to his innards. When they were close enough that Alvin could see the horses clearly, he braked to a slow stop, relieved.
Ain't mine. I wouldn't allow any on my place as sorry as them.
Two riders were driving a remuda of 30 or so runty-looking Mexican ponies. A horseman with his shirt tail hanging out reined toward the car. Huey recognized the no-name cowboy he had met on the C.C. Tarpley Ranch.
Hey! Where you going with them broomtail?
The cowboy's clothes were dirty, and he had several days' growth of whiskers, showing he had been on the trail.
We're taking them to Mr. Gervin for delivery to a buyer. They come from down on the Pecos.
You know, it'd be a lot easier to take them along the road than to cut across my ranch.
It was Mr. Gervin's orders to bring them this way. We'll be off your place before they have a chance to eat much of your grass. Adios!
The cowboy spurred off after the horses.
Now, why would Fat give an order like that?
So he could tell a buyer that they came from your ranch and not exactly be lying about it? That's how he sold the sorry string to old man Jenkins, under false pretenses.
That duplicitous son of a bitch!
Huey was surprised to hear such language come from Alvin. He didn't used to say words like duplicitous. The sound of an automobile was still so uncommon in the countryside that it brought out everyone within hearing distance to see who was coming or going. Walter appeared in the door of the tool shed, and Eve stood on the step in front of her kitchen, shading her eyes with her hand. The black dog trotted to meet the car, barking all the way. Out in the field, someone halted a team and turned to look. Huey couldn't be sure at the distance, but he supposed this was Lester, the Nester boy, hired on a day basis to help Walter with his crops. Lester never lacked for excuses to halt work. Huey would bet a dollar that he would leave the mule standing and come all the way to the house to find out who had arrived, though it was none of his business. Eve waited for the dust to settle after Alvin braked to a stop, then she walked to the car.
Huey, we didn't expect to see you home so soon. Is anything matter? Are you all right? Where's Tommy?
That was a lot of questions, and Huey lumped the answers together.
I'm doing fair to middling. And Tommy ought to be along in a day or two. He's bringing our horses.
That boy? All by himself?
Well, by the time I was his age, I'd seen all of Texas and half of hell.
Lately, he had seen the other half.
How long till dinner?
If I'd known you all were coming, I'd have killed the old red rooster. I'm afraid you'll have to settle for mutton stew.
Mutton?
Didn't Tommy tell you that Walter bought us a flock of sheep? They pay better than cattle when we can keep the coyotes off of them.
A bad taste came into Huey's mouth, as if he'd been chewing tobacco. He had boasted to Dutch Schneider that there were two things he had never done, swamp out a saloon and herd sheep. Then he proceeded to sweep Schneider's floor. Now he might find himself herding sheep. Stove up and not worth his beans, he could sink no lower, it seemed. Huey stepped out of the car, bracing himself on the cane.
Dog, what did I ever do to you?
The old dog never had accepted him as a member of the family. Huey had to limp all the way around the car before he could satisfy Walter that he was not a total invalid.
He's getting pretty good with that cane. Before long, you'll have to run to keep up with him.
Alvin was trying to make him feel better, but his solicitude only sharpened Huey's sense of being less than whole. Lester stopped 20 feet short of the car and stared without speaking. It was just as well. Huey couldn't remember ever hearing him say anything worth listening to. Lester welcomed any chance to get away from the plow for a while. Sooner or later, Huey figured, he'd wangle himself a job at the courthouse. Things there moved at about his chosen speed.
Lester, would you mind taking my bedroll to the barn? I'll be sleeping down there.
You'll do no such thing, Huey. You'll sleep in the boys' room like kinfolks, not in the barn like a hired hand.
Eve turned severe eyes on Lester.
One that's fixing to get fired if he doesn't go back to the field and do a little work.
Now, Eve.
Walter's peacemaker trait was often called upon when things did not go Eve's way. Lester turned and started toward the field in a trot, though he soon slowed to a walk, and he climbed over the fence rather than take the trouble to open a heavy gate.
That boy's poor mother. I can imagine the tribulations he's put her through.
Though he was a brother-in-law rather than a wayward son, Huey had given Eve more than her share of tribulation over the years.
Well, as soon as I get this cast off my arm and my knees a little more limber, you can send Lester home.
You wouldn't be in that shape if you hadn't tried to spare Tommy from getting hurt. You're here to rest, Huey Calloway, and you'll do it if I have to tie you to a rocking chair.
How long till dinner?
After 3 days, Huey feared he would wear a hole through the seat of the rocking chair. He was restless to be up and doing something, even if it was wrong. The dog's barking gave him reason to rise and hobble to the door.
Looks like Tommy's coming.
Huey then went outside. He was halfway to the barn when he heard the screen door slam as Eve came out to look for her son. Tommy was not alone. Long before he could see the face, Huey knew the rider. He could usually recognize his friends at a distance by the way they sat on their horses. And no one rode with quite the same easy slouch as Snort Yarnell. Huey wasn't sure whether to whoop for joy or give in to dread. With Snort, there was never any knowing. Tommy was riding his own dun horse, leading Biscuit on a long rope knotted so it wouldn't choke. As soon as Tommy released him, Biscuit headed straight for the feed trough. He knew exactly where it was.
Well there, Tommy. You're kind of careless who you let ride with you.
Snort grinned at Huey, showing his gold tooth in full glory.
He's still gimping around trying for sympathy.
What happened to that night watchman's job? They catch you opening the bar after hours?
Me and a runny-nosed constable had a little set to. It was his fault, not mine, but you know how narrow-minded them small-town John Laws can be. After a few nights of walking the streets, I decided I'd rather take my chances on being killed by a horse than die of boredom.
Snort's grin died, and he looked Huey up and down with a sober eye.
We've come to help you get well, me and Tommy. We're going to work you and make you exercise till that arm and leg move better than the day you was born.
It's more likely you'll kill me if I don't kill you first.
Huey turned back to Tommy.
You took your sweet time getting home.
A hint of guilt came into Tommy's face. Huey noticed a bruise on his cheekbone.
Snort had to go by Pecos City to see a man about a horse.
I warned you to take roundings on Pecos. It's too lively a town for a boy your age.
It sure was lively after Snort got there. We had to leave in kind of a hurry.
It was their fault. They ain't as friendly anymore as them old-timey Pecos folks used to be.
Eve was walking out from the house.
I wouldn't say anything to your mother about Pecos. She might run us all off.
Eve hugged her son, then stepped back to examine the bruise.
Dunny spooked at a rabbit and caught me off guard. I took a fall.
Thinking that somebody had been teaching the boy to lie, Huey gave Snort an accusing look. He doubted Eve was taken in. She'd seen through Wendy's told by far better liars than Tommy.
You are staying for supper, I suppose, Snort.
It was less an invitation than an expression of resignation. Snort was notoriously unreliable. He might stay a month, or he might ride away in 10 minutes without saying a word. Huey hoped he didn't stay a month. Eve would be chewing up nails and spitting out tacks long before then.
Eve, the angels in heaven could take lessons from you. I'll be here for supper tonight and many more after that. Poor old Huey needs my help.
God had better help us all.
After she returned to the house, Snort poured oats in a trough for his horse.
First thing we gotta do, Huey, is cut that cast off of your arm. How do you expect to move your elbow with it all trussed up that way?
Huey had been toying with the same notion. His leg had not collapsed when he unwrapped his knee. It was becoming a little more flexible every day, though he could not straighten it fully. He could even take a few rabbit-hopping steps without the cane.
Since when have you been practicing medicine?
I've doctored many a horse. In your case, there can't be much difference.
Gratitude made tears come into Huey's eyes.
You don't know how much it means to me, Snort. You're coming all the way back here to try and help.
You're my friend, Huey. I've moved around a lot and rode with a lot of good fellers. I ain't ever had many real close friends. Mainly, there was just you and old Grady Welch. I lost Grady. Time we got to him, there wasn't a thing I could do to help him. And Alpine, I was sore afraid I was fixing to lose you, too.
I'm figuring on being around for a long time yet.
And I'm here to help you.
At the supper table, Lester the Nester boy listened with mouth hanging open as Snort told stories. Some contained a grain or two of truth, though not enough to hurt them much. When Snort paused to poke half a biscuit into his mouth, Tommy turned to Huey.
Mr. Jenkins asked about you. Said he was sorry you left without saying goodbye. He wanted to proposition you again about the foreman's job at the Circle W.
Well, he hired him a foreman.
Seems like him and Mr. Underhill got in an argument over the way to handle those broncs he got from Fat Gervin.
Mr. Gervin.
Mr. Fat Gervin. Anyway, Underhill left, and Mr. Jenkins needs a foreman.
Huey felt a stirring of interest. The Circle W was as pleasurable as any place he'd ever worked, situated in a valley with sheltering mountains on either side, a clear creek meandering unhurriedly down the length of it, and not too many fences or gates. It was far enough from town that a man wouldn't be bothered by a lot of uninvited company.
Well, I can't think of a place I'd rather go if I was inclined to take on the responsibility, and if I wasn't busted up like an eggshell. I can't even ride a horse.
What responsibility? You just tell the boys what you want done and they do it. Foremen don't even have to ride a horse. I've worked for several that rode around in a buggy like they owned the bank. Even had somebody hitch up their team. It's like having a gravy bowl that don't ever run dry.
With Snort around, it would need to be an awfully deep bowl, Huey thought, watching him take another helping of mutton stew. Snort probably didn't recognize what it was, for he had a cowboy's unreasoning prejudice against sheep and everything associated with them.
Well, I don't know that I could give orders and stand back. In the shape I'm in, I couldn't do much else.
As the meal ended, Snort jerked his head toward the door.
Come on out to the barn with me, Huey. We'll do something about that cast on your arm.
That time Walter broke his leg, we had to leave the cast on for 3 months.
An arm heals faster than a leg.
Huey wondered where that piece of wisdom came from. Probably out of Snort's imagination. But he was ready to shed the cast anyway. It itched as if a nest of wood ants had hatched under it, and it gave off a smell that reminded him of a dead mule. Snort rummaged among Walter's tools. Cotton had been methodical, making sure every piece of equipment had its proper place and was returned to it immediately after use. When Cotton left home to seek his own way working on automobiles, that sense of good order went with him.
Well, Walter's bound to have a set of hoof trimmers around here someplace.
He found them and began to nip at the edges of the cast, breaking it away one small piece at a time. Huey winced, for Snort's twisting and straining made the arm hurt. Huey was almost ready at one point to call a halt, but by then half the cast was in shreds, and he saw no choice except to go ahead. Both men had worked up a healthy sweat, Snort through exertion, and Huey through fighting pain. Snort stopped to roll a cigarette and offered one to Huey.
I've quit. Since the accident, they've got to where they taste like cow chips.
Not only could he no longer work as he used to, but one of the simplest of his pleasures had abandoned him as well.
Never tasted a cow chip, so I wouldn't know.
Tommy and Lester had come to the barn and watched in silence as Snort methodically demolished the cast, passing the elbow and working along the upper arm. Finally, he pulled the last of it away. The rough barn floor lay littered with bits of plaster and cloth. Huey carefully felt the arm. It still hurt to the touch where the bone had been broken, just above the elbow.
Looks sort of crooked, don't it?
Nobody will see it. Your sleeve will cover it up.
Snort had one leg twisted and scarred from an argument with a horse. He maintained that it still worked all right, even if it looked like a bear had chewed on it. A cowboy hadn't graduated to the top ranks until he was marked up some. Huey tried working the elbow. Like the knee, it resisted. The arm bent only a little.
You need to squirt some axle grease in there.
Huh, you'd reckon that work?
Tommy elbowed him.
Don't you know when Snort's kidding?
It makes sense to me.
Snort gripped Huey's arm above and below the elbow and tried to force it to bend. Huey jerked free. He rubbed the arm in an attempt to smother the fire that Snort's abuse had aroused.
If that's the way you doctor horses, you probably had to shoot them afterwards.
Some of them got well. Your arm is going to take a lot of work.
He had been resisting what Alvin had suggested. Now, through the pain, he raised a silent prayer.